This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest today is a semi-recurrent guest, not as often as I'd like, Nick Wakeman, editor of Washington Technology. Nick, welcome back, man.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And you can find Nick at WashingtonTechnology.com, and I suggest you do so. There's a lot of good stuff there. And look for him on LinkedIn, not Facebook. what's new at Wash Tech? Anything particular?
We're actually just launching a new sort of product or feature on the website. We're in the data gathering stage. We're going to do a quarterly WT Contractor Confidence Index.
Oh, cool.
So we're going to do a quarterly survey, basically asking the same questions to people about, do you expect your revenue to grow? Do you expect your company to add employees or shrink? Are you happy with your job? Are you looking for a job? Those kind of questions. And then I have a formula that's supposed to work that'll crunch all those answers into sort of an index number. And we'll see then over the quarters how that tracks. Sort of, we're trying to follow, got the idea from the Consumer Confidence Index, just mm-hmm. kind of get a sense mm-hmm. on how people feel, how the market's going.
Cool. Well, when you come out with your first report, we'll definitely
I'll let you know. I think it's going to be fun.
Let's do some recap from 14. I know we're into February already, but I want to do a recap of 14 before I ask you about what's going on or what should we watch in 2015. So let's start off with the protest arena, if you will.
Yeah, I think the protests, are something I'm personally very interested in following. So I may pay more attention to that than the average person in the market, but I think the protests really, they're continuing to grow. We're seeing, it seems like every major program that comes out just runs into these, flood of protests. I think it's saying two things about the market. On the contractor side, it really emphasizes just how tight competition is and how important these vehicles are, that if you're not on it, you're going to do everything you can to get on it.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you see some of the results of how often, the agency puts out this big IDIQ, there's protests, they pull it back. How often that happens is repeatedly with some contracts. I mean, NetSense has been through that multiple times.
Yes.
The Army ITES as well.
What I thought was almost a protest-proof vehicle, Soup.
Yeah, Soup. That one really surprised me. I thought, in fact, when those protests came out, I was like, oh, okay, they'll fight this all the way through. And then all of a sudden they pulled back. And I'm like, that one, because that one has such a great reputation and so well managed. But it does say that, the other side of it with the agencies, I think that they're, the people running these procurements, they're just, overwhelmed, I think. There's not enough good quality people to put out the requirements and develop the requirements and things like that. And so I think that's why you keep seeing these big protests. And then for the companies, too, there's no downside to protest.
Well, there's a cost to protest, but
it's not that great. I mean,
your lawyer, all things considered.
Yeah, your lawyer, especially if you're an incumbent and you've lost, because that gets the contract extended three, 6 months a year.
In the early 90s, I ran the Government Marketing Services Conference and Expo. We had all of the ad agencies, all the publications, all of them come in. We'd brand seminars all day. In the keynote, one of the keynotes was a panel, and Jim Lito was then president of PRC, they just won Super Mini. And from the podium, Lito says, just to scare the crap out of everybody, he says, I maintain a $5 million slush fund to protest anything I lose.
Wow.
been with us a while. Is there a preferred venue for the contracting community to do the protest? I mean, it seems like GAO is coming down heavily on government side lately.
Yeah, I mean, GAO is like the first line you know, the vast majority of them go through there because they have a, you know, a process. But you can, if you're not happy there, you can go to the Federal Court of
Appeals.
Claims. Yeah, the claims court. It's riskier too for both sides when it goes there because GAO has certain parameters they always stick to, but when you get to court, everything's wide open.
Right. Yeah. Take your best legal mouth with you because anything can happen.
Yeah.
So what about you know, continuing on that line? What about procurement delays?
Yeah, I mean the delays. It's funny. Every executive I talk to, they're always talking about, oh, it's got moved to the right. All those, you know, delays. And we actually did a report that just came out a few weeks ago where we went out and talked to people about the kind of delays they're seeing. And it's really, you know, almost, I think it was 88.5% said that they have at least one contract that gets delayed, if not actually more than 50% of their contracts are being delayed. And the thing that surprised me, and I guess it shows my bias of how focused I am on bid protests, I thought that's where most of the delays were. But most of the delays are during the requirements phase, when they're developing the requirements, and then during source selection. Once they get the proposals in, they keep putting off making the awards because they're, I think, one, the volume of proposals that come in overwhelm the government staff, and it just takes them a while. There's always questions back and forth. So that's where we're seeing most of the delays is in the requirements phase. So they're struggling to write the requirements, and then during the source selection phase when they're, you know, struggling to make those choices. The bid protest phase actually, you know, is maybe 18%, I think, was where they see the delays there, and the 70% of the delays occur in the requirements and source selection phase.
Okay.
And it's not going away. No one, you know, I think we asked one question, do you think the, you know, delays will continue? It's like 95% said yes. And, you know, we're kind of stuck with that. So you have to plan for that.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
And anticipating any drop in the number of RFPs being sent back?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think the volume, 2014, the volume of stuff coming out definitely picked up compared to 13. I mean, 2014 was a much better better year, and we could talk about that more.
Yeah, what about, you know, the number of companies going after smaller bids? It just seems to keep going up, and I don't see any.
Yeah. I mean, they're, because I think you see agencies breaking up these big contracts into smaller ones when they get recompeted, and so you see, you know, the big players moving down, going after these smaller contracts. That squeeze in the middle continues. I think that's, you know, kind of a fact of life.
Yeah.
Because you have more contracts being set aside for small business. Those requirements are going up. And so, you know, there's fewer opportunities there. So there's more competition for those that are open. And the bigger players have somewhat of an advantage.
Yeah, they do. Well, you know, they do and they don't. I mean, you know, I had Bob Lofeld in with Larry Allen a while back, and Bob called 2014 the year of the layoff of the contracts staff. So,
At the companies?
Or at the companies, yeah. So traditionally they had more resources, but it seems like they've gone maybe to the outsource mode.
Yeah.
So they're using those companies like Lofeld, you know, AOC Key, you know, and others.
Yeah.
So,
are you familiar with the GovProp people that these guys created this market for freelancers doing BD work and proposal writing
because
they saw so many companies are laying off their people, but they still need those services. So you, on one hand, you're cutting your costs, but then you have to turn around and outsource it and hire freelancers.
Yeah, less overhead as far as employee count, benefits, all that stuff, you know, so maybe fewer HR. But 1099s aren't inexpensive.
Right.
And the better they are, the more expensive. But I have seen GovProp. I speak at APMP, the Association of Proposal Management Professionals, a couple of times a year, and it's just chock full of really smart consultants.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Great place to hang. Wonderful place to speak. Yeah. Let's talk. Well, no, we'll talk about the budget after the break. We're going to take a break. First, I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We will be back after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I'm with Nick Wakeman today. Nick Wakeman is the editor-in-chief of Washington Technology, one of my favorite reads in the market. Nick, let's pick up 2014. The budget last year seemed as close to normal as I've seen it maybe in, what, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think 2014, especially coming on the heels of a horrible 2013, really was kind of a return to normalcy. And I think we saw, you know, more, there's more visibility into budgets, more predictability in RFPs and solicitations. And so you really saw companies, you know, being able to plan, being able to, you know, make some investments and you know, winning some work and getting through the bid protest period and stuff. So it was definitely, it was a much better year for companies than 13.
Okay, so the budget was normal, and we'll talk about the 2015 budget shortly. The other thing, and you track this probably more than most anyway, is the M&A activity.
Yeah, we definitely saw that pick up in 2014, and that's continuing. I mean, but you saw some pretty significant deals last year. You know, TASK was acquired, Kinetic was acquired. Just more recently, you know, USIS deal with PAE. So you saw some big deals and then a lot of smaller deals, a lot of consolidation. A lot of people are always telling me that, you know, there's an overabundance in the services part of the market, that mm-hmm. there's overcapacity. So you're going to have these, you know, these deals to kind of bring that down. And you see that with deals like when, you know, Ingility buying TASK was an example of that with their... They're adding scale. I mean, scale is still important in sort of the particularly in the, if you're doing a lot of time and material kind of work, that you know, you're growing your base and keeping your costs fixed, so you can, in the low price world, you can bring your cost per unit down, or however they describe it. Right. And then you see a lot of people going after cyber, of course, and health IT, you know, data analytics, those sort of hot market, you know, segments.
There's a, you know, I live out near Columbia, Maryland, and there's a lot of small cyber companies out there because of our favorite friend at Fort Meade. as you know, they do civilian work as well, some of them, but a lot of them specialize there. But I mean, we're talking very small companies that do extraordinarily cool things that I don't understand at all.
Yeah. And those companies are really, you know, you saw, you know, this was a 2013 deal, but it kind of kicked it off, you know, when, you know, CACI bought 6-3 systems. You see these really, you know, these, the larger companies picking up these players to fill these niches, and that, especially if they bring some sort of intellectual property or some sort of, you know, proprietary product, own a particular really, you know, tough, you know, in the Intel world, you have to buy your way into that. You're not going to win your way in.
Not normally. not in a time frame that most people are comfortable with.
Right. So yeah, I think, and you're seeing, you know, seeing smaller ones coming together. Another company, Vistronics, has made multiple deals. They closed, I think, 3 deals on one day in December, and most of that was all
rent. Yeah, I remember that. Buying this. They're like, what the hell? Kmart sales. Attention, Kmart shoppers. Man. This is a 2015 gig. Actually, it's a this week gig. PSC just picked up Tech America from CompTIA.
Yeah, well, they bought the foundation. That's, you know, I don't know. I don't know CompTIA that well.
Me either, but I mean, they've had it for less than a year.
Yeah, like 8-9 months.
Yeah.
Tech America did do a lot of, was doing some state and local advocacy work in their key, so they're keeping that part of it. But sort of what I always felt was one of the real values of Tech America was, you know, their vision conference. They do a defense strategy conference. I think they have a really good CIO survey. Those things were all done by the foundation, and that's basically what they've given to PSC. I mean, I guess they're getting the cost off their books.
Yeah.
Because PSC didn't buy, there wasn't like money exchange.
So. Right. I don't think Tech America's been the same since Olga left.
Absolutely.
But with Stan driving the car these days, or this week now, and going forward, I think there is that void has been filled.
Yes, so I think you're right. And PSC, you know, it's not just Stan.
You've got Alan.
You've got Dave Winogrand. There's a great
team there.
Great team there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you talk about your intellectual property, boy.
Yeah.
and wired intellectual property. Yeah. So pretty, you know, and that reminds me, I should have Stan back.
Yeah.
Stan, if you're listening, get ready for a call. Final thing on 2014, open season on incumbents, man, it was weird to watch.
Yeah. It really, you know, it was just, you know, you talk to companies, you know, it just shows how much the market changed. I mean, the customer's really looking, you know, for low price. So that was a tough one for some incumbents to handle. And innovation, you know, that promise of innovation, you know, that a challenger can bring more easily than the incumbent. So you saw companies that, you know, typically without even blinking are winning 75-80%, you know, winning 50% now. And that's a huge change.
Yes.
And, you know, some companies are, you know, are adjusting to that, and they're, you know, they're lowering their prices. You saw a lot of companies, you know, trying to suck all their costs out of, you know, their back office or what do they call it, the non-indirect costs. So I think long-term, it actually is probably a good thing for the market. I mean, it shakes up the incumbents, makes them, you know, more focused. It helps the customer. Some people are looking at, you know, changing business models and things like that. So I think that it's going to continue, you know, at least through
this year. It's going to be weird to watch that and the M&A activity because you've got to be extremely strategic, because we had a period 3 to 5 years ago when people were picking up companies and then, you know, within 36 months they started shedding them,
right,
or at least significant parts of them. So, you know, the buying activity in the open season on incumbents is a mixed bag, but for you and me,
it's
fun to watch.
You know, and that's the other thing with, you know, mentioning M&A that and these contract awards, you see a lot of, you see many deals where, you know, you didn't get on that big IDQ or you lost your spot on it, and you turn around and you buy a company that won.
Right.
I mean, you know, Mantech has done that, you know, to get on several contracts where they're not on it, and they look at that, and that's a great asset, because then they can, you know, those IDIQs are just so important. I think more than 50% of the spending goes through them.
Right. Well, when I was working with one company on the transition from Soup 3 to Soup 4, and for a variety of reasons, they didn't win, so we went out and shopped and picked one up. And then we did it working with a totally different company on Soup 5, and we just started very early and pursued it very carefully, and they won.
Yeah.
Or sort of won.
you hit a great point there that, I mean, we've said this all along for a long time. You can't just wait for the pre-RFP to come out and those kinds of things. But now you really can't. I mean, you've got to be out there talking to people and letting them know, hey, if you're going to write this, this is something we could do, so you can help influence.
I had company calling me literally weeks before the RFP was due saying, hey, how do we get in on this? Forget it, Jack. Yeah. You know, ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
Who's that Joanne Wojtek person anyway? we're going to start on 2015 here, but it starts with the 2014 elections and them being seated in 2015. What does the midterm elections do for our business community and the budget?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think maybe a change of atmosphere on the Hill.
Really?
I think the hearings and the things will shift from, you know, I think a little bit beating up the contractors, maybe to more beating up the agencies. I think that's one thing. But I think we'll also see, you know, I'm becoming a little more optimistic maybe on how we're going to get through and get a budget. I think that maybe we'll have 2016 budget by, you know, January, February next year. So.
Well, we have to, because they control both houses.
Right.
And if they don't come up with a budget, there will be a backlash.
Right, right. And I think that, you know, just with maybe a little more friendly to contractors. And at the same time, you know, whether we'll see any like procurement reform issues, that'll be yet to be seen. I think that we'll know more, I think, by June. We'll kind of, if things are going to get done, they'll get done by then. Because as we get more towards the end of the year, you know, there'll be more pressure. You know, people will be looking ahead to 2016 elections and things. So.
Yeah. I had a reporter from a competing publication call me a couple of days ago. He actually called me during Shark Tank. you're interrupting the bids here, you know. But he asked if I had noticed and what was the impact of the increased top 100 contractors giving money to campaigns in 2013 and 2014. And did I have any insight on that? And naturally, I had about zero.
Yeah.
And that, told them that. And I was going, whoa, no.
I didn't realize, you know, I know they've always been pretty active. I didn't realize it had increased. I have to look at that.
Yeah.
That data.
Apparently, the numbers were significant enough to get a couple people's attention.
I know they've always skewed towards the GOP.
Yeah, which they, is, they,
but
they spread their money out, but yeah, but it's usually like a 60-40
right
spread.
Yeah.
So your peanut butter sandwich is a little skinnier than the other guys.
But so, I do think, you know, you see more, whether it's campaign giving or just paying, you know, more attention being paid to Capitol Hill and to, you know, getting up there and talking it. Because, you know, these are big contracts and big programs. I mean, I, you know, and IT isn't the back office anymore. So
yeah. I mean, there's always been spending to try to influence particular programs. But, you know, I think the thrust of this guy's question was, did they do this to get rid of sequestration?
Yeah. No, I don't think so.
That's a little broad.
Because I think everybody wants to get rid of sequestration.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Whether they'll be able to do it or not.
And hopefully there will be no more bluffs like, well, if you don't let me do this, we'll go into a sequestration. You know.
Yeah.
Don't say those things. So you're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We will be back with Nick Wakeman right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with Nick Wakeman of Washington Technology. You can find Nick at washingtontechnology.com. I suggest you do so because it's a good read. So predictions for 2015. What are you seeing here?
You know, I think 2015 will probably be similar to 2014, but I do see it as kind of a transition year. I think you're seeing certain things. I think will continue to gain traction. I mean, I think the agencies are more comfortable with the cloud. Companies are getting smarter about developing, sort of hybrid solutions where, like I was talking with CenturyLink the other day, and they're touting this ability, and others are as well. This single pane of glass where you can look through and manage whether it's a on premises system or a public cloud, private cloud. Community cloud, when you can offer them a way of putting, keeping your most precious information inside and other stuff outside, but being able to manage that through a unified, portal, I think you'll see those kinds of solutions help people get, accelerate cloud adoption because it's not all or nothing kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And plus it gives you the ability to move things in and out and you're not going to be tied to one provider too. It gives you more control. And I think agencies want that. Cyber, of course, will be continue to be very important. I just recently wrote something, sort of my own little rant, when Ash Carter was having his confirmation hearing. They asked him, "Do you see a cyber Pearl Harbor coming?" And he was like, "Oh yes," and "we're not prepared." And I wrote, I said, "I agree with we're not prepared, but we've already had Pearl Harbor, or we're in the middle of a cyber Pearl Harbor when you look at." The things over the last 2 years, Target and...
Yeah, but those are private sector. I think, maybe the Hill was talking more about, are they going to attack the electronic infrastructure,
Yeah, but I still, I think that, I don't know. I mean, you see, we're just, and every agency is under attack. So I think the idea of like, oh, we're waiting for some big event is a distraction. I think the big event is happening. It's all around us right now.
I don't think a big event will happen because of potential repercussion. I do think that these little forays will continue.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't have a crystal ball, but yeah. I anybody that comes at us in a big way, it may take us a couple of months, but there's a sledgehammer waiting for you.
Yeah. And my point was that we're already at the war. The cyber war is happening right now. So
I was there's a chunk of news. The Pentagon declared cyber an arena of battle.
Right.
Was that 2014 or 2013?
I can't remember, but it's an interesting because they talk about like domains, like you have the land, sea, air, and now cyber is that fourth domain. And
So are nerds going to start wearing black berets?
Maybe.
Or what?
Maybe.
My son will love that.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Okay. And the reporting requirements, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, that's I think, coming this year. And as the regulations for that come out as requirements, I think it was in the, I can't remember now if it was in the defense bill or where it was, but that, companies having to report, when they've been hacked and share, more sharing of that information. The downside is you got to have some sort of protections so that people more aggressively, more proactively share. I know there's a lot of opinions about USIS, but I felt that, you know, when they self-reported their hack, and then, you know, that was just like the opening that OPM needed to shut them down and put them out of business. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of opinions on USIS and how they operated, but, you know, I think that was sort of a chilling sign, I felt, to industry that you would do that to a company instead of saying, okay, let's step back, let's fix it, and let's move forward.
I'd like to know a little more detail that's never broken the light of day there to see what really precipitated this. Because maybe there's some stuff there that we ought to know that we don't.
Right.
And if there was deeper kimchi that we were in, I really think we ought to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
The second half of we're in the second quarter of the FY now.
Yeah.
So what do you see as some of the bigger things that we're going to be stepping in?
Well, I think that you know, when I say that 2015 will be better than 2014, I felt 2014 really, you know, laid after having no foundation set in 2013, 2014 kind of rebuilt that. And I think it'll be a year for companies, sort of a return to growth, because you see the awards that got made in 2014 sort of setting the stage for 15. So my thought is that, you know, if you don't grow in 2015, I got to question, you know, sort of your long-term viability as a company.
Yeah.
Because I think that, you know, I've talked with several companies that are very optimistic about 2015, and part of that reason is because of the work they did in 2014. And I know that's common. You know, you're always having to build for, you know, 12, 18 months out in your pipeline, things like that. But through 14, companies were still seeing revenue shrink. So I think we should see a return of revenue growth this year. I don't know how big it'll be.
Well, you know, could that be impacted by certain elements of the Republican Party pushing for further reductions in force?
It could, but I think that impact will be the next year kind of thing. That'll more influence 2016's growth projections.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that part, you know, non-essential personnel when there's a shutdown misleads a lot of people.
Oh yeah. Funny, we have a friend who both the husband and wife, you know, work for the federal government, and when the shutdown happened last year, the husband was like, "Well, my wife is holding this over me because she's essential and I'm not." And they basically had the same jobs at different agencies, but there was kind of a big joke between them how essential she was, how non-essential he was.
Yeah. What about visibility into budgets? Are we still going to see more or
You know, that's what I think, that by June we'll sort of know if we're going to be on track to get even just to get a continuing resolution in place. I think that I think we will have more visibility. I just can't see them returning to where, you know, they'll pass a CR for, you know, they might pass a CR for a month or two, but you'll know they'll have a framework in place to get things done.
Do you think there's a possibility of no CR this year because of the control of both houses?
No. I mean, when's the last time we didn't have a CR?
Mid-90s, I think.
Yeah. So I mean, we can hope. I mean, that would be ideal. And it's ridiculous that we can't do it.
Well, it's mandated.
Yeah.
That there not be mandated that there's a budget. So frankly, you know, October 1, they should all be fired.
Right.
Not that I have an opinion on the matter.
It's very, you know, it's kind of embarrassing for as a country, you know, to operate that way. And the thing is that they've sort of gotten used to it because, oh, it's a CR and things didn't fall apart. Well, sure, things aren't going to fall apart, but the opportunity cost of having that predictability and having, you know, starting new programs, it just keeps us behind. And
well, it puts us in the same rut because it means at the end of the fiscal year, when agencies really know how much they have left, they need to spend it, because if they don't, it will not be there the following year.
Yeah.
So the spending cycle is so, you know, one year budget's stupid anyway.
Yeah.
I think it should be a three, but that's just me.
Yeah. It'll be interesting, you know, in the budget proposal. President Obama wants to consolidate some agencies, and I don't think it has any chance. But there are some Republicans who like that idea. But but that's what we do need. We need somehow they should do a BRAC for restructuring the government, where you have a so that the politics of it take some of the politics of it out, and just say this is the plan, vote yes or no, and let's move forward.
Take the politics out of it. Yeah, there's. That's going to happen, Nick. Yeah. Let's go back to Wonderland.
Yeah.
On that, we will take a break. You're listening to AM Tower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We'll be back with Nick right after this. Welcome back to AM Tower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Nick Wakeman of Washington Technology. Find Nick at WashTech, WashingtonTechnology.com. On 2015, you see more consolidation on the industry side?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, I haven't dug too deeply into the deal yet, but Harris Corp is buying Accellus. I think it's a $4.7 billion deal, which I'm not sure it was so much of a surprise that Accellus was, on the block, but it's a great deal, I think, for Harris. I mean, it adds a lot of scale, which is important. They're, but Accellus, since Accellus was a spin out from ITT, and then they did their own spin out just in the last 6 months, I guess, of Vectrus, I think is how the company is pronounced.
I've seen the name. I don't know much about it.
Yeah, and so.
Still say Verisign, by the way.
Yeah. And Accellus had been struggling. I think their revenue, since 2009, and now it had dropped. I mean, they did some divestitures, of course, but.
They're one of the ones whose bids have fallen by the wayside a little more, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So. I think we're going to see more of those kinds of deals. And I think we'll see some divestitures as well continue. As companies sort of get the right focus and right shape.
Maybe if you and I roll some change, we can go buy Lockheed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lockheed, it's funny, like companies like Lockheed, they'll continue to make deals, but you're not going to see them
buy it.
Do a multi-billion dollar deal unless they're getting into...
They're buying those little tiny companies.
Right, right. You mentioned earlier about the...
my buddies at
around Fort Meade. That's what companies like Lockheed. They're looking for those,
people that own those esoteric specialties.
That's right.
When you buy the company, you got to lock down the personnel.
Right.
And usually, half of those companies are run by graduates of the Fort who not only have the relationships, but they know exactly what certain programs need.
Yes, exactly. And that's really valuable to companies that are making acquisitions. It's sort of that knowledge. Because I think we've really seen more of a shift of focus in the end result, the outcomes. I think, not enough of it yet, but I think that, getting close to that mission is critical for all these companies. So I think, we'll definitely continue to see consolidation, continue seeing pickups of health IT and cyber and Intel and some command and control. I think the Harris Accellus deal, there was a significant C4ISR aspect to that. Mm-hmm. Both companies were in radio, so there's some overlap, but I think that they'll consolidate that.
That's an area that's going under some rapid transition too. So, the IP there and the direction of how those things are evolving is pretty fun to watch. Yeah. I mean, you read publications like C4ISR, or I read Military Electronics and Aerospace. There's some strange stuff going on.
Yeah, it's not the walkie-talkie we're used to.
No, it ain't that thing on the guy's back with a 10-pound handset.
Right, the man pack.
Continued pressure on price.
Yeah, I think even if Congress gets rid of sequestration and increases, I think we'll see budgets increase in pockets, but I think there's still going to be a tremendous amount of pressure on price. That's sort of almost a cultural shift in a way, maybe that people are thinking, you know, they're going to pay more attention to that even as budgets increase. So I think that, you know, and companies looking to, especially if they're a public company or thinking of going public or have, you know, private equity ownership, sort of that building those margins back is going to be a big priority. So yeah, you're going to keep seeing, you know, that pressure on price for companies. How much farther they can go is a good question. I mean, because companies, we've seen, you know, so many, you know, layoffs and you know, taking out middle management and restructuring.
The impact on the economy is huge.
Yes.
And in a lot of ways. I think it was Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. I saw an article the other day called Low Price Regardless.
Yes.
I'm going, whoa. That's, I wish I came up with that phrase.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And it does seem to be, you know, taking serious root.
Yeah.
And I think there's some nasty consequences that are going to occur as a result.
Yes. Yeah. I think we'll, that'll be, you know, that's a great point, Mark, that the you know, that fallout from LPTA, you know, when we'll, you know, we hear all kinds of, you know, stories, but you know, how much, you know, I think more is to come on the negative impact that's had on,
right.
On, you know, and it's not just on the contracts, it's on the government, you know, the problems they've had with programs and things. I think some of that can be linked back to picking the cheapest contractor.
I agree. And you further on the price issue, the, you know, strategic sourcing initiative, another thing that I'm not a fan of.
Yeah.
You know, especially when it's applied to the schedules where fair and reasonable prices were already negotiated.
Yeah.
Now we want you to cut them by 15%.
Yeah.
Hello. And they say this is a small business friendly program. My butt.
Yeah.
Small businesses can't afford to sell products that much lower.
It, you know, another thing I'm going to, you know, that's just getting started is sort of, and I think they're starting it with Alliant, all that, the pricing, the data that they're collecting. I think it's you know, I can't really fault the government for wanting to collect that information. I think it's a good tool, but, you know, I don't really trust them and how they're going to apply it.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
No argument for me, bud.
So that makes me a little, because you hear, you know, Frank Kendall, you know, is a great guy with the better buying and all that. But I remember reading that document, the last one, and he has that section in there where he talks about appropriate margin. You want to make sure they make appropriate margin. I'm like, the government shouldn't care about that. You know, push more things to fixed price, and if a company could figure out to make 25% margin on that fixed price, well then, you know, 3 years, 4 years when you're recompeting it, you know, you're going to push that price down even farther. That's when you do it. Not say, oh, you're gouging us, because they're not gouging you.
No.
You decided we only have X amount to spend. That's what we're going to give you. Let them figure out how they can, you know, make profit off of it. And as long as you're getting what you want, getting a good result, who cares what the profit is?
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah,
agreed.
I get a little. That's so. One issue I get a little, you know, worked up about.
I'll throw gas on that fire if you want.
Yeah.
So. So it leads into, you know, lots of companies have gotten a lot leaner.
Yeah.
How deep can these cuts go?
Yeah, it's really remarkable. You know what we've seen that, you know. You think, oh, okay, it's done, and then all of a sudden you hear they're doing, you know, doing more layoffs, whatever the company it is, you know, because especially just looking at the big players who've kept their margins up by cutting, because while their revenue's gone down, well, you can't do that forever, you know. And I think, you know, whether it's going to be this year or next year, I think you're gonna have to see some repositioning where, like, you know, we need to invest, you know, we can't just be cutting, we need to invest, or we're gonna, you know. It's, you get into a downward spiral,
and it really doesn't stop. So,
right.
So I'm not going to belabor that point right now. So there's, you know, really just a tremendous number of unknowns left. Give me a wrap up thought here.
Wrap up thought. Well, I'm optimistic about 2015. I think that you know, you're going to see the well positioned, you know, the companies that took the opportunity of 13. And 14, as painful as that was, to really restructure themselves with an idea of how they're going to come out the other end of this. The ones that did that the right way, you'll see them flourish. I think the companies that don't flourish in 2015 are the ones that, you know, weren't as were more reactionary than proactive. Mm-hmm. Who that is, naming names, we just have to wait and see what happens at
right.
the end of the year. But
yeah.
but I am optimistic about 2015. I think we'll have a clearer budget again, like 2014, and then who knows what'll happen 2016, of course. 2016
we'll see.
Yeah. I think it's gonna be a good year.
I think it's going to be an amusing year to watch once again.
Yes, so, every year's amusing.
For me, yes. Nick, thanks so much for coming in, man. Appreciate
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
This is not my day job. Amtower & Company turned 30 years old in January. I continue to advise a number of companies on all aspects of marketing to the government and leveraging that wonderful tool, LinkedIn. And every month, my Government Market Master Forum hosts workshops and seminars in Columbia, Maryland. You can find information at federaldirect.net or drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to Amtower Off Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.